The Albina Ministerial Alliance says it wants justice and reform within the Portland Police Bureau after the death of 25-year-old Keaton Otis and what they call a, quote, string of avoidable officer-involved shootings. The group says there are many questions about what motivated police to make the traffic stop in the first place.
Losing a child is the worst parent's nightmare. You know, and you never think it's going to happen to you. We just don't walk around like that. It just, I don't care how bad it gets, you don't think nothing's ever going to happen to your children. They're going to give you grandchildren. They're going to live happy ever after and all that.
Something we can't forget. He was pulled over by a gang enforcement team because he looked like a gangster. Most people, when they hear that, know what that means, what that's talking about. And it's not fundamentally about the fact that he was wearing a hoodie or not. It was about the fact that he was a young black man in Portland and was criminalized, targeted, profiled, and brutalized by the police, and eventually killed by the police because of that fact.
Keaton Otis was shot and killed by Portland police on May 12th, 2010. After his vehicle was stopped at Northeast 6th and Halsey. He was 25. Tonight on Circle A Radio, we'll talk to Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis, and Jeff, part of Fred's support network, about the upcoming anniversary of Keaton's death and the memorial to celebrate his life. Stay tuned.
Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis. I was born and raised in Portland. Went to school here, Mighty Marshall Minutemen. My mother worked for the Port of Portland. She was a boss down on the docks, Terminal 6. And I have a younger brother. And my stepfather was in the service, in the Navy. And we grew up over, we lived in North for a while. And then we moved over to 15th and Skidmore. Growing up for me, it was pretty easy for me. I didn't get in trouble. I seemed to avoid trouble. It was enough trouble when you got in trouble with your parents. And I couldn't see going to JDH, you know, and being taken from your parents and nothing they can say. And I'll watch my friends get arrested and all that. And I'm like, man, you guys need to do something different. I got a little bit of trouble when I was 18. What teenager doesn't? I learned from that one. I don't like being in the back of a police car. My teenage years were more of trying to learn life and to be a man. You know, my first son was born when I was 17. So I had to grow up. So I tried to instill into my kids the same thing that I had learned from my elders. I hung out with older people because, you know, it was always told to me, if you want to learn how to be a millionaire, then hang around millionaires. If you want to learn how to be smart, hang around smart people. You could be as dumb as you want, but if you hang around them long enough, you'll pick up something. And I took that philosophy all through my life. I tried to instill into my kids, you know, that you treat people the way you want to be treated. My kids managed to stay out of trouble, for the most part. Actually, I grew up two blocks from Daryl Foxworth and his brother. We lived two blocks away from each other. Another officer that is retired, Larry Anderson, we all played basketball together. And we always knew that Larry was going to be somebody in authority, but he was always fair. There's a gentleman that was on the force for 30 years and never shot anybody. And the relationships that we had, you know, Harry Jackson and Chief Moose, they were respected, so they gave respect. You know, and when the parks were being built, like Unthanked Park, when Unthanked Park was being built down on Schaefer, you know, Mississippi was a bad area, and I guess that's why they built the park, because there were so many people in that neighborhood, and it was running down so bad that that was the basic trouble they had with down on Mississippi. But with the kids, with us, it was nothing, you know, we had dirt claw fights. That's as serious as we got. And the officers was always waving and, you know, but it's just not there anymore. And I don't think that being a police officer should change. I think what you're sworn to do is what you should do for decades to come. If anything, you learn more stuff. But the neighborhood, like the neighborhood I grew up in on 15th and Skidmore, has really, really come up. I mean, it's beautiful over there. Not that it was ever bad. And over on Garfield, those big, beautiful houses over there, that was a neighborhood where everybody just, there's a lot of families come out of that area, a lot of families. The big, scary change, and when it came, was that police station that they built there, right in the middle of the neighborhood. A lot of people opposed it. That wasn't a good idea. That, you know, that kind of made a statement to a lot of people. A lot of people did not believe that should have been there. But yet again, you know, it was there. And so it puts a, to me, it's two ways. Okay, it's nice that we got it over there, but what are you really doing? You know, what kind of statement are you really making? The way the youth is today, it's not like, you know, we were back in happy days, you know. It's not like when I was growing up going to school, you know. The styles have changed and everything has changed. And if you don't keep up, you get left back. That's okay. But to just bother these young people when I would say, you know, 95% of them are just being kids, you know. They got a lot of adrenaline. Portland's no different than any other city, you know, in the world. You know, there's going to be problem spots, but they need to be addressed in a manner that is respectful to everyone, not just go out and say, oh, yeah, got a hoodie on. Come here. Everybody has a hoodie just about, and that's not right. These kids are not afraid, and they're not afraid for good reason because they know they have rights, you know, and they know that I can stand on this corner over here and talk to my friends. You know, I can do that. For them to be harassed out of nothing is wrong. And I've heard many kids talk about that, you know. You know, I ride the bus a lot, constantly. And, you know, I wear my son's picture on my shoulder. And the last several months, kids have come up to me and said, you know, was he your cousin? I said, no, it was my son. And they start talking. They're like, man, you know, it's like, that was so wrong. And Keaton was, you know, lovable. Keaton, you know, that's just how Keaton was. Keaton was a beautiful young man. You know, he was very interested in arts and he loved life. You know, Keaton was an easygoing gentleman. But Keaton was very highly spoken of. I didn't know a lot of his friends, you know, like his mom had got married. Okay, so, and this is what a lot of people don't know. She got married when Keaton was young. And being the man that I was, grew up to be, I gave them respect. She got a husband. That don't mean, you know, I get to run back and forth to your house to see my kid. And it was never like that. Keaton was always in my life at one stage or another in his life, from a toddler, you know, to his adult life, you know. So, you know, me and my son had a relationship. It was good, you know. I mean, when we did hang out, you know, he loved to come to the family barbecues because they know I cook. And he had dozens and dozens of little cousins all over the place. And he loved kids. You know, Keaton would, at the barbecues, he just loved all, because there's so many little babies, you know. He just fed on that, you know, and you know, he knew he was part of. He knew his extended family. He knew his daddy's side of the family.
You are listening to an interview with Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis, who was killed by the Portland police on May 12th, 2010, here on Circle A Radio. On May 12th of 2010, Keaton Otis was shot and killed by Portland police officers during a traffic stop. Portland police officers originally pulled Otis over because he was wearing a hoodie in warm weather, slouching in the driver's seat, and looking at the police car through his side mirror. The officers involved in Keaton Otis's shooting were members of the Hotspot Enforcement Action Team, which is a police squad specializing in stopping gang violence. The traffic stop turned deadly in under 3 minutes when Otis supposedly fired at one officer, wounding him in the leg. The other officers involved in the stop fired at Keaton 32 times, hitting him 23 times, and killing him. While the fatal actions on the part of the police were heavily criticized, Portland Police Chief Mike Reese stood by the officers' actions, saying that their response was appropriate for the situation. While the Portland Police Bureau and the grand jury may see no criminal wrongdoing on the part of Portland police with regards to the shooting of Keaton Otis, Keaton's father, Fred, and the community are not ready to let Portland police off the hook for their actions. Keaton's death was the third fatal police shooting of 2010 and was followed by three more police shootings before the end of that year. To read the officer reports, witness testimony, transcripts from the grand jury, and to find other information about the case, go to www.mentalhealthportland.org and search for Keaton Otis. There is also much information on that website about other people killed by the Portland police. We now go back to our interview with Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis.
Keaton is one of five children. He's third in line. His older half-brother, George, is 33. His sister, 32. And then Keaton, and then Alicia, and then Nelson. All my kids are tall. Everybody in Portland knows my kids. I remember a couple years, I think it was his sister's, her 18th birthday. Came to her 18th birthday party we had out at the park. And he was overwhelmed with all the family that he had. And I told him, this is your family, man. That's your blood over there. Just to see the look on his face. You know, because I know being an only child's got to be a hard thing. You know, you got to play by yourself. You got to entertain yourself. You know, you got to sleep in your own room by yourself. I believe that he handled it real well. At one time, he was hanging out with a cousin that he didn't know it was his cousin. He'd been hanging out with him for like 2 years. He didn't even know it was his cousin. And they were the best of buds. And when Keaton passed, that one nephew came by and he has shared with me, says, you know, Uncle Fred, I didn't even know that that was my cousin. And they did art together. They did music together. You know, I said, you know, that's how God works. God put people in your lives and he just sometimes he don't tell you nothing. They just there. Like I said, you know, I can remember a time when he had met his younger brother and sister and we were at Peninsula Park and Keaton was pretty tall. He was a tall little kid. And, he said, Dad, both our knees go inward. I said, yeah, I'm sorry, son. It's genetics. And, you know, I said, you're just part of me, man. You know, that's all, you know, you're just part of me. And he would smile and, you know, and as I look at the pictures in different stages of his life, you know, just how he grew and matured, you know, and, as a parent, you have all these different memories of each of your children and how they affect you and how you affected them, you know. And the one thing that I'm very grateful for and really didn't expect anything less out of his mother was that she was always going to make sure that he knew about his father and knew what kind of man he was or is.
Keaton's family is at the center of this, and this is about the people who are most affected by this tragedy, but it's also an opportunity for everybody in this city to come together and support those folks and express their empathy and their care and support a collective project of healing.
That was Jeff, a member of Fred Bryant's support network. You have been listening to an interview with Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis, who was shot and killed by Portland police in May of 2010. This is Circle A Radio, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. We are able to create this kind of programming through the support of the community, which is you. Thank you for your financial contributions, which keep this show and all other KBOO programs on the air.
Thank you for listening to and supporting Circle A Radio. We now return to our interview with Fred Bryant about his son, Keaton Otis, who was killed by Portland police May 12th of 2010.
Every month on the 12th, we meet at 6 and Halsey at 6 o'clock for a vigil. It will go until I can't go there anymore or they put a shopping center right there. And it's because it's a place where I really feel his spirit when I'm there. You know, I won't stop. I won't stop. You know, and you know, I should look at those shows on TV where families go for decades and decades and decades. You know, I'm one of them parents. I won't stop. You know, so yes, the vigils would be nice. People come out, you know, and we just meet for about an hour. We chit chat and have the candles and the pictures of him and stuff. You know, we've become a little family, the group that has been coming there consistently. And they're very knowledgeable people. So we always have something to talk about. They will continue even after the 1 year anniversary. They will continue. I'll be there rain or shine, just like we've been there rain or shine. We're there.
And the vigils are an important way and an ongoing way that people can plug into this, can support Fred, can remember Keaton, and can make sure that this is not something that's forgotten, not something that's covered up, not something that's swept under the rug. Keeping in mind that this happened and that this shouldn't happen again, and being an ongoing presence about that.
Yeah.
Aside from the particulars of this situation, it's important to keep in mind the context and the context of the breakdown in trust between the Portland Police Department and the people of Portland that particularly at the time when Keaton was killed had reached a point of crisis. This killing was a reflection of and part of the reason for that lack of trust for the Portland Police Department and a clarity on the part of a lot of people in different communities that these people whose job it is to keep us safe are doing anything but that. Also, I think the context of the tragic fact is that Keaton is dead because of the fact that he was racially profiled. And I think that's something we can't forget. He was pulled over by a gang enforcement team because he looked like a gangster. Most people, when they hear that, know what that means, what that's talking about. And it's not fundamentally about the fact that he was wearing a hoodie or not. It was about the fact that he was a young black man in Portland and was criminalized, targeted, profiled, and brutalized by the police and eventually killed by the police because of that fact. That kind of racism on the part of the Portland Police Department is a crisis and is a life-threatening crisis, particularly for African-American folks and folks of color in this city, and is something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, the thing with the whole of in the last year and a half or 2 years, they had a thing in the Portland Tribune, I think, Portland police officers that shot 25 people in less than 2 years or something like that, and 90% of them had mental health. Here's my question. Did you not learn nothing from the second one you shot that you claim had a mental issue? This shows a pattern of practice, which is clearly stated through the Department of Justice of any agency showing a consistency of their practices, there's a problem. So we're supposed to sit back and say, oh, they haven't been trained. I don't know. In my experience, especially in Portland, it's not hard to see the people that have mental issues. It really isn't. If you're paying attention, you can see them. They're not hiding. And the police know this. That's what disturbs me. They know this. It's almost like a they're, you know, if they're in a certain mood, let's go find some homeless or whatever. You know, that's where it takes my head. Because why would it be all these people who don't have weapons, they're homeless, or the fact that they knew the person because they knew Chassie, They knew that man. And I kept up on that. This is their truth. This is our truth. You have to put them on blast. You got to put it out there in front of them, you know, because they'll sit there and write something, but then they don't think nobody else is paying attention. They really don't think we're paying attention, you know. So it is disturbing that so many people have lost their lives and they use that as an excuse.
You are listening to an interview with Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis, and Jeff, part of his support team.
This city at one time had many homes for people with mental issues and stuff, and they closed them all down. They put everybody on the street. They closed all the houses, you know. And for what reason? To line their pockets more? I mean, those guys up there ain't hurting, you know. They're not hurting. But we are down here, you know. It's like, if it wasn't for us, y'all won't be able to sit up in your big fancy house and all, I don't care what you invented or whatever. But if we wasn't pushing the button to make the microphone, you know, you wouldn't be able to sit in Italy or whatnot. So if everybody just stopped doing everything, I bet they feel it then. It's just, we got to come together and not think that everybody's up here and the rest of us are down here. Okay, you could be up there, but we got to come to a thing where, look, I can't do without you and you can't do without me. Bottom line, we just can't. You know, I worked in the field, drug and alcohol counseling and people with mental issues and stuff. And I understand, you know, I understand it. Work with a lot of people today, every day, to see the pain. You know, and your heart swells up so much that you wish you could just take all of them and just build a humongous condominium and let them all live. You know, I mean, there are people out there that don't even belong out there. People that just lost everything, and not through no fault of their own. People that went to work every day and they just lost it all. You know, it's just a human thing, man. We got a human problem here. They can hide out up in the suburbs, up on the hill, you know, if they want to, and look down on us and say, well, we're not going over on MLK or nothing like that. They can do all that kind of stuff, but they have to remember is that these people down here that are in the trenches are the ones that, you know, help you climb up to the top and be where you are. And to do people like we do them just ain't right, man, especially in Portland. I mean, you know, we got some history here, no doubt, but we got some history of some really good people, and people that help each other, period, no matter what. I've lived in other states, and I've always come back to Portland. People say hi to you, you know. I didn't want to say hi to nobody in New York, Chicago, none of that. People just run around like ants. Mind their own business. They all got a job to do. But we need to work more on our human counterparts here. So, you know, I think that the neighborhoods are coming back, you know, and people are still having families. It'll never stop, you know. And our city is still growing. You know, my concern is, you know, it's not about us. It's about our children and our grandchildren and their children. What are we leaving back for them? You know, this state, you know, they keep yelling about they have no money. This is a rich state. If you can go out and spend $454 million on a train to go up Grand and around Broadway and back down, just this big circle thing. That money could have went somewhere else. Okay, it really could have. How much money is that train going to make ride up? How many people are going to ride it? You know, they're not going to take over Max. Who is that going to benefit? Nobody in the neighborhoods up past Broadway. There's a lot of money here. There's no reason. There really is no reason that we should have so many homeless people. There's just not. I mean, if they really wanted to get serious, I mean, $450 million could have built a lot of apartments. A lot of apartments. That's a lot of money and build some apartments. Be a whole bunch of people living. You know, I just think the wrong people. I've always thought the wrong people run the country. You know, because what they do just don't make sense. It makes sense to them. It works for them. Then we get the runoff. You know.
That was Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis. Thank you for supporting the kind of radio that we can create only here at KBOO Community Radio. Once again, thank you for supporting community radio in general and Circle A Radio in particular. We can't do it without the financial support of our members. And now we return to an interview with Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis.
I work in the community. I'm in the community. As a matter of fact, what does it tell you? Saturday? Thursday, I met Keaton's math teacher from Benson. And that was, you know, I was in the store and he just saw the picture. And then when he said, oh, I was his math teacher, I said, oh, well, I'm his father. And it was just like, he just, you know, oh my God. Because I've been very quiet about this whole thing all the way through. And it seemed like I was left out. I was left out. There's no talk about his dad. Nobody knows, well, where is his dad? Well, where is he? I was pretty hurt. I was devastated, you know. It took me a long time to get my emotions together, first of all. And I don't like the word victim. I just don't like that word, you know. So I didn't want to, you know, play victim and, you know, I guess it's the pride and the integrity, you know, it's just like, you know what? I got to do this the right way. I got to do it the right way for my son. So, and I thought doing it the right way was just let everybody else talk and I'll get all my stuff in a row. Because we know what's going on in our city. We know what's going on. So I got a good group of people in my life, you know, that support anything and everything that I do. And if it wasn't for them, yeah, I don't know where I'd be, you know. But I do have a lot of support. There's been a lot of growth. New people in my life. You know, losing a child is the worst parent's nightmare, you know, and you never think it's going to happen to you. We just don't walk around like that. I don't care how bad it gets. You don't think nothing's ever going to happen to your children. They're going to give you grandchildren. They're going to live happy ever after and all that. And when it happens to you, some people go away because they don't know how to comfort you. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. And they could be your best friends. I have best friends that said, Fred, we just don't know what to. I said, don't do nothing. Just give me a hug. That's what you can do. And to feel the full effect of what other parents across this country feel. Man, it's like your head never stops going. It never shuts down. And mine doesn't. It doesn't shut down. It just constantly goes and goes and goes. You know, they put a name on that, PTSD. You know, and I've heard that word many times, many times. And, you know, I had to find, say, you know what? Okay, so that's what's going on with me. For real, you know, just accept it, Fred. That's what's going on. But I don't need no pills. Let me get through it. So it's really not a good spot to be in, you know. And I do a lot of things in the community to try to keep myself busy, to help other people. We are having the one-year celebration at Miracles Club on the 12th at 6 o'clock, which is a club that I belong to, and I'm on the board where I am the Sergeant of Arms. That keeps me really busy. They have been a great support to me and keeping me focused. You know, I'm really happy. I'm really blessed for my family and the people in my life. I can't stop saying it enough because, like I said, I stayed quiet for a very long time. You know, so I could have some sense of direction, you know. So this memorial and celebration of life is for everybody because it's for the community. It's not a black thing per se. It's a human people thing that's going on in our community. And Keaton was part of this community. There was a lady that called in earlier this week. She was like, I don't know if I'm going to come because I'm white. I really wanted to respond to her. That doesn't make a difference. It just doesn't. Everybody understands peace. I don't care where you're from. Everybody understands serenity. Everybody understands a hug. That's a universal thing. So absolutely want everybody to come out, especially all his friends. I want everybody to come, you know, because it has hurt the whole community. Every time one is gone, no matter how they go, that's another generation that'll never make a generation. And it doesn't matter what your ethnicity is. So this is for everybody. And how we've gotten through this year, the emotional side, the sleepless nights, the just waking up every morning and saying, okay, I do this one more day. And remembering it's not about me. It's about getting out there and helping somebody else because somebody else is in a worse spot than I am and they still have to go through life and they need help. That's my mission every morning. So I would love to see, and I hope to see, little kids, all of them, because like I said, Keith was a very popular young man.
That was Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis.
Thanks for listening to Circle A Radio, and thanks for calling in your support for our program, for KBOO, and for community radio in general. This is Jeff, one of the members of Fred Bryant's support team.
There is a Facebook page both for the one-year memorial coming up on May 12th at the Miracles Club. That's at Northeast Martin Luther King and Mason at 6 p.m. There's a Facebook page for that. There's also a Facebook page for the monthly vigils that have been happening. So folks, if they have access to that, can go to those. Right now, that is the contact for the organizing that's happening.
Yeah, he has a web page. Just punch in Keaton Otis. Everything's on there. You know, I just, once again, just want to give an extreme open invitation to everybody to show up. It's going to be nice. It really is. You know, meet your neighbors. Yeah.
That was Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis.
Again, you can get more information if you go to Facebook and search for Justice for Keaton Otis. We'd like to thank Fred, Jeff, and Walita for making this interview happen.
Thank you for listening to Circle A Radio. Circle A Radio can be heard the first and third Wednesdays here on your member-supported community radio station, KBOO Portland. You can also hear our past work at the KBOO website, and you can contact us there, www.kboo.fm. You can also email us at circlearadio@gmail.com. Our next show airs May 18th. Thanks for listening.